Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, June 23rd, 2025. From the front page, Tuna loved this city. Former Mayor Mike Tuna McElroy, inducted into the Decatur Hall of Fame. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. Anyone who knew Mayor Mike McElroy, fondly known as Tuna, also knew of his love for Decatur. McElroy served on the Decatur City Council for 6 years before running for mayor in 2009, and had been overwhelmingly elected to a second term before his unexpected death in July 2015 at the age of 63. On Friday, he was inducted into the Decatur Hall of Fame, located in the lobby of the Decatur Civic Center, and the plaque honoring him was unveiled before a crowd of family and friends. "He deserves this today," said Brian Byers, Vice President of Development for Central Illinois Multimedia Group, who served as Masters of Ceremonies. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe, who was appointed to finish McElroy's unexpired term after his death, and has been elected to serve in her own right since, gave him credit for most of the improvements in the city in recent years. The $94 million dredging project at Lake Decatur, the $72 million project to fix the aging sewers, the new Decatur Police Department headquarters, all were begun by McElroy. "Much of what is right in Decatur started with Tuna," Moore Wolfe said. "Although we miss him dearly, having him on the Hall of Fame wall is a lasting tribute to his legacy. He was the true father of neighborhood revitalization," she said, "and his love for the community came from a heartfelt desire to make it better." John Skeffington, president and CEO of Skeff Distributing, was McElroy's boss for 25 years and gave his blessing to Tuna's decision to run for city council and mayor, though it meant that McElroy would have to spend a lot of time away from work to fulfill his duties. The two men met when Skeffington was a freshman and McElroy a sophomore at St. Teresa High School in the late 1960s, and became lifelong friends. Skeffington said McElroy's political career began in high school when he decided to run for president of student council. He wasn't on the ballot, but word of mouth and McElroy's popularity resulted in a win. "Tuna was a people person," Skeffington said. McElroy's son, Matt, said he and wife, Christina, had just found out they were expecting not long before McElroy's death, and made a trip home to Decatur to tell the family. They told his parents, McElroy and his wife, Lynn, that it was very early in the pregnancy, and they didn't want people to know yet. But somehow, everyone did, Matt McElroy said with a chuckle. And while they were in town, people kept stopping them to congratulate them. Mayor Paul Osborne, who was mayor immediately prior to McElroy's election, said he will most cherish their conversations. They had many while McElroy was on city council, and kept having them after McElroy took office as mayor. "Tuna loved this city," Osborne said. "He loved being mayor. He loved public service. He loved all of you." Also on the front page, Juneteenth, annual event, a family reunion. Fellowship, fun, mark celebration on hot day. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. Alex Fonder can tell you all about Juneteenth. "I have some teachings that I learned," he said. His grandmother, Rosalind Anderson, wearing a Black Girl Magic t-shirt, said she loved Saturday's event in Decatur, even though it was hot. "Everybody can get together and learn about Juneteenth and solicit some of the businesses that were represented by the vendors," she said. The Juneteenth event, held in Central Park, was the 31st annual, said Evelyn Hood, director of the African American Cultural and Genealogical Society and Museum, which has sponsored the event every year. This year's theme was Family Reunion, and Hood said the idea is to give people a place to go, meet up with old friends, and enjoy the day and some food, music, and entertainment, which included dancers, poets, and live music. Juneteenth marks the day, June 19, 1865, that news of the Emancipation Proclamation finally reached the last remaining slaves in Texas. Due to limited communication technology of that time, and the time it took for the Union Army and state's abolition laws to enforce the newly ratified 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery in the entire country, it was 2 years after the proclamation was signed, before the last slave freed. The word Juneteenth, Hood said, was coined to blend the word June and 19th into one. Volunteers helped Hood manage the event, including the Big Sisters Service Club, founded in 1913 by women who wanted to serve their community, said President Opal Duncan, or Dixon. They donate to worthy causes and give their time to projects, like Juneteenth. We just go through the community, and if we see a need, we donate, she said. Crystal Wyatt manned a table filled with Juneteenth rubber bracelets that she gave away to commemorate the occasion. I really just wanted to enjoy the festivities and the people and the camaraderie, she said. The African American Museum is such a gem in Decatur. It's such a jewel, and the experience, everybody that comes and visits has a totally different experience. They leave different than when they came. It's so much information that's downloaded, as much as you can take. I support it 100%. Vendor Hagasa Buckner is from Ethiopia, married to American author Brian Buckner, who uses the pen name Fahim Juhedel. She had jewelry, drums, T-shirts, and art from Ethiopia at her booth. And her reason for attending Juneteenth, she said, was to make herself available to teach African Americans about their heritage from the perspective of someone who grew up in an African country. I want to introduce to younger generation to know their heritage, she said. I'm here to anything they want to know about their heritage. I'll be glad to share. These are things we have in Africa, in America, in Ethiopia, all these art pots, like clothing that I'm wearing, to give like a witness, you know. Most African Americans, a lot of them have not traveled back home, so I'm here from Africa just to let them know your background is beauty. From page 2, 7 Dogs Killed in Southwest Illinois Van Fire by Mike Kosietek, Glenn Carbon. 2 dog rescue groups from Texas announced Saturday that 7 dogs had died in a van fire Friday night on Interstate 270 in the Metro East Glenn Carbon. 4 dogs survived the fire, and one of them was taken to a nearby animal hospital for burn and smoke inhalation injuries, said Tammy Livingston, co-founder of Bell's Buds Rescue of the Houston area. We're just devastated and sick, she said. Of the 11 dogs in the van, 2 belonged to Bell's Buds Rescue. Livingston said her group had Guapo, an Escadoodle, who survived and was taken to Hawthorne Animal Hospital in Glen Carbon, while Presto, an Australian Shepherd puppy, was one of the dogs that died. The Mercedes van, which was carrying the dogs in kennels, was engulfed in flames on the right shoulder when first responders arrived, according to a news release from Illinois State Police. The fire occurred about 11:27 p.m. Friday night at milepost 11 on eastbound I-270 near Illinois 159. The van's driver and a passenger were not injured. After firefighters were able to extinguish the blaze, state troopers determined that several of the dogs had died. Police did not release any other details about the incident. By some miracle, Guapo made it out alive, the Bell's Bud Rescue Group said in a Facebook post. A good Samaritan saw him escape the flames and rushed him to Hawthorne Animal Hospital, where their incredible team acted quickly to save him. A spokesperson for Hawthorne said Guapo is in stable condition. Livingston said one fortunate aspect of the fire is that Guapo was able to be treated at Hawthorne, which is about 2 miles from the fire scene and open 24 hours a day. Livingston said her group's dogs were being transported to their adoptive homes in the northeast in a van operated by Cypress Lucky Mutt Rescue, which is also in the Houston area. At this time, we do not know the exact cause of the fire. What we do know is that blaze was fast and intense, said a message posted on Facebook by Cypress Lucky Mutt Rescue. Thanks to the incredible bravery and quick action of our drivers, 4 dogs were rescued from the flames. 3 of the survivors, Sasha, Charlie, and Magnolia, have since been delivered to their adoptive families, according to Cypress Lucky Mutt Rescue. Also from the front page, Illinois, senators critical of bombing. Duckworth, Durbin say move risks wider war, by Allison Petty. Both of Illinois' Democratic U.S. senators expressed dismay over President Donald Trump's decision to bomb 3 nuclear sites in Iran, aligning with many in their party who said he should have sought congressional approval. The sentiments of U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth contrasted with those of their Republican counterparts, who largely praised the president for taking decisive action and characterized the decision as necessary. Duckworth, a combat veteran who lost both legs during the Iraq War when a Black Hawk helicopter she was piloting was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, offered particularly sharp criticism. The Trump administration illegally bombed Iran tonight, putting American troops and citizens at the risk of retaliation and threatening to draw us into yet another Middle East war without congressionally required approval, she said in a statement on Saturday night. I have long said Iran cannot obtain a nuclear weapon, but this goal could and should have been pursued through diplomatic means first. Duckworth said her top priority, and Trump's, should be the same, ensuring the safety of American troops, personnel, diplomats, and citizens in the region, as well as those of U.S. partners and allies. She called for the administration to come before Congress to discuss its actions. Durbin, meanwhile, noted that Trump had withdrawn the U.S. from the long-term comprehensive nuclear agreement that the country and other world powers had reached with Iran in 2015. The agreement, brokered under President Obama's administration, had limited Tehran's enrichment of uranium in exchange for the lifting of economic sanctions. Trump withdrew the U.S. from the arrangement in 2018, calling it the worst deal ever. During his first term, President Trump killed the Iran nuclear deal, which required mandatory inspections and invited this dangerous situation, Durbin said in a statement on Sunday morning. Iran without inspectors appears to have been developing dangerous weapons-grade materials. And now, President Trump's actions in bombing Iran puts the U.S. on the brink of a wider war in the Middle East, all without constitutionally required congressional approval. Our recent experiences in Iraq should be a stark reminder of becoming embroiled in wars in the Middle East. Members of the president's party generally took a different view. Well done, President Trump, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina posted on X. Alabama Senator Katie Britt called the bombing strong and surgical. The Senate Armed Services Chairman Roger Wicker of Mississippi said Trump made a deliberate and correct decision to eliminate the existential threat posed by the Iranian regime. The quick GOP endorsement of stepped-up U.S. involvement in Iran came after Trump publicly considered the strikes for days, and many congressional Republicans cautiously said they thought he would make the right decision. From page 5 of the Monday, June 23rd edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, National and World News, The Digest. Police: church staff foil potential mass shooting. Wayne, Michigan. A Michigan police chief said church staff stopped a man armed with a handgun and a long gun, averting a potential mass shooting Sunday morning at a church west of Detroit. Chief Ryan Strong said parishioners at Cross Point Community Church in Wayne spotted the gunman driving recklessly, then saw him exit his vehicle wearing a tactical vest and carrying weapons. The man began firing as he approached the building and was confronted, Strong said at an evening news conference. A parishioner struck the gunman with his vehicle as the gunman shot the vehicle repeatedly, Strong said. At least two staff members shot the gunman, causing the fatal wounds. Strong said the gunman's motive was unclear, but it appears he was suffering from a mental health crisis. Police said one person was shot in the leg. The pastor said about 150 people were attending the service, and no one was hurt. Tennessee judge orders release of Abrego Garcia. Nashville. A Tennessee judge ordered Kilmer Abrego Garcia's release Sunday as he awaits a trial on federal human smuggling charges. But the El Salvador citizen, whose wrongful deportation became a flashpoint in President Trump's immigration crackdown, was not expected to be allowed to go free. At his June 13th detention hearing, prosecutors said U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement would take Abrego into custody if he were released on the criminal charges, and he could be deported before he has a chance to stand trial. U.S. Magistrate Judge Barbara Holmes scheduled a hearing for Wednesday to discuss the conditions of Abrego Garcia's release. The U.S. government already filed a motion to appeal the judge's release order. Holmes wrote that the government failed to prove that Abrego Garcia was a flight risk, that he posed a danger to the community, or that he would interfere with proceedings if released. Syria. A suicide bomber in Syria opened fire, then detonated an explosive vest inside a Greek Orthodox church Sunday, killing at least 20 and wounding 52 others, state media reported. Syria's interior ministry blamed an Islamic State group extremist. Gun violence. Officials said a woman was killed and at least 9 other people wounded in a shooting Saturday night at a South Carolina celebration for Juneteenth, which commemorates the end of slavery in the U.S. after the Civil War. Investigators don't believe the shooting was politically motivated. Journalist targeted. Iran detained family members of an Iran international journalist Saturday in retaliation for the channel's coverage of Iran's war with Israel, threatening to hold them until the journalist resigns from her position. Boat capsizes. 6 people were confirmed dead and 2 others were missing after a boat capsized on Lake Tahoe in California during a powerful weekend thunderstorm, officials said. Turkey. Turkish authorities formally arrested prominent YouTube journalist Fatah Etali on Sunday for allegedly threatening President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, police state media reported. Allies. Japan and South Korea on Sunday marked the 60th anniversary of the normalization of their diplomatic relations after Japan's brutal colonial rule of Korea in the early 20th century. Much of U.S. braces for more dangerously hot days. Tens of millions face advisories under heat dome as it heads east. Associated Press. tens of millions of people across the Midwest and the East endured dangerously hot temperatures again Sunday, as a rare June heat wave that gripped most of the U.S. was expected to last to the end of this week. Most of the northeastern quadrant of the country, from Minnesota to Maine, was under some type of heat advisory. So were parts of Arkansas, Tennessee, Louisiana, and Mississippi, the National Weather Service said. Weather Service offices throughout the region warned of sweltering and sometimes life-threatening conditions through Wednesday. Forecasts called for heat indices of between 100 and 108 degrees Fahrenheit for several places, including central Illinois. Please plan ahead if you take frequent breaks, if you must be outside. Stay hydrated and provide plenty of water and shade for any outdoor animals, the service office in Wakefield, Virginia, said on social media. Meteorologists blamed a phenomenon known as a heat dome, a large area of high pressure in the upper atmosphere that traps heat and humidity. Twin six-year-old girls were among three people killed when thunderstorms brought trees down on homes in central New York before dawn Sunday, according to the Oneida County Sheriff's Office. Several inches of rain fell in just over a few hours, inundating the small town of Kirkland. A 50-year-old woman died when a tree hit a house nearby, sheriff's officials said. Thousands in the region were without power. New York Governor Kathy Hochul declared a state of emergency in 32 counties. From page 14, Senior Health. Happy Trails. Consider these states when looking for a place to thrive in retirement. By Catherine Pomeroy, Kiplinger's Consumer News Service. Eating well, staying active, getting enough sleep, and having strong relationships are key to a longer, healthier life. Studies back this up. A balanced diet can reduce chronic disease risk by 20 to 30%, according to Harvard Health, and regular exercise can add from 3 to 7 years to life expectancy. Whether you're 55 or 105, your health care needs will almost always increase as you age, and finding an environment that promotes happiness and health while also providing top-notch health care can be a challenge. Research shows that happiness improves with age, with 88% of those in their 60s and 91% in their 70s or older describing themselves as pretty happy or very happy. And because happiness and good health typically go hand in hand, it makes sense that living in a state that offers the best of both worlds can be the best medicine for retirees. We pored through data from Medicare Guide and Caring.com to find the best states for overall senior health. Best state for retiree health and happiness is Minnesota. The North Star state ranks number one in health care for older people due to a combination of costs, quality, and access to support services. The state has a robust network of medical facilities, including the world-famous Mayo Clinic. The Minnesota Senior Health Options Program is a comprehensive health programs package for those 65 and older and assigns care coordinators to help seniors manage all of their health care needs. Minnesota also ranks high in average monthly insurance premium cost savings. Honorable mentions: California, Nebraska, Massachusetts, North Dakota, and Hawaii. Best state for retiree happiness, Utah. Out of all 50 states, Utah tops the list with the most contented retirees. The Beehive State scores high, thanks to its supportive environment and having a low percentage of 65-plus living alone, reducing the risk of social isolation and anxiety. And more than 44% of seniors in Utah volunteer, the highest rate in the U.S. Honorable mentions include Idaho, Delaware, Connecticut, Nebraska, and Hawaii. Best state for a low cost of living for retirees. West Virginia. The Mountain State is ranked as the best state for a low cost of living, about 16% lower than the national average. This means that older residents can make the most of the state's lower housing and food costs, transportation, taxes, and living expenses, while enjoying health care costs that are about 2.3% more affordable than most other states. Honorable mentions: Arkansas, Mississippi, South Dakota, and Oklahoma. Best state for the highest life expectancy for retirees. Hawaii. The Aloha State has one of the highest life expectancies in the U.S., and that's not surprising. Those stunning beaches and warm tropical vibes seem to be just what older people love. Add to that the islanders' healthy habits of staying active and embracing the outdoors, and you've got a recipe for physical and emotional wellness that keeps seniors thriving. Honorable mentions include Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and Minnesota. Best state for retiree health insurance, New Hampshire. Based on information from the Kaiser Family Foundation, New Hampshire ranks at the top for low health insurance costs, with premiums priced at an average of $323 per month. For comparison, premiums cost an average of $841 per month in its neighboring state, Vermont. Honorable mentions include Minnesota, Michigan, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Virginia. The state rankings for best retiree health: by 2030, the U.S. population age 65 and older is projected to reach roughly 71.6 million. Most older people will need quality health care to meet their most basic needs. Though every state has access to health care, Caring.com lists these 10 as the best, from 1 through 10. Utah, Colorado, Vermont, New Hampshire, Minnesota, Hawaii, Washington, Connecticut, Delaware, and Maryland. Turning to sportsman news. In last night's Game 7 of the NBA Finals, Oklahoma City defeated Indiana Pacers 103-91. So the Thunder won the Larry O'Brien Championship Trophy as they won the NBA Finals with an exciting Game 7 victory against the Pacers. Scores of local-ish teams. In the WNBA on Sunday, the Chicago Sky lost to the Atlanta Dream 93-80. And the Las Vegas Aces defeated the Indiana Fever 89-81. Local teams' baseball scores included the Chicago White Sox defeating the Toronto Blue Jays 4-2. Then we had the Cincinnati Reds defeating the St. Louis Cardinals 4-1. And in interleague play, the Seattle Mariners defeated the Chicago Cubs 14-6. And on this date, on June 23rd in baseball, in 1984, Chicago's Ryan Sandberg hit two late-inning home runs off St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Bruce Sutter to tie the game twice as the Cubs went on to win 12-11 in 11 innings. Sandberg led off the ninth with a solo home run to tie the game 9-9, then hit a two-run, two-out homer in the tenth to tie the game 11-11. And current baseball standings show in the American League, the Chicago White Sox are in last place in the Central with a 25-53 record. The Chicago Cubs are in first place in the Central, National League, with a record of 46-31. And the Cardinals are in third place in the Central with a record of 42-36. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, June 23rd. Please stay tuned.